Good evening again. The topic for tonight and for these coming weeks is the group of qualities, items, that are often called the five spiritual faculties, or sometimes the five spiritual powers, the five strengths, and occasionally the five precious jewels. So I'll run through them, their names quickly, and then I'll repeat this list several times tonight, because it'd be nice if you get them in your mind, just this list. Faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. So as you know, the Buddhist tradition is replete with lists. And of course, in the days before books and writing, they were devices for memory, the different lists. And so there's one way of looking at the whole path, Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path. But then there's another, there are several different groupings that you can look at the Buddhist teaching, the Buddhist path, and Four Nobles, Eightfold is one. But there's another grouping that involves 37 requisites for enlightenment. So that's another way of working with the path and studying it, that it's outlined that way. And in that 37, these five appear often at the beginning, and are often said as the heart of these 37. So we speak of cultivating these five faculties, powers, strengths, precious jewels: faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. So there'll be things that, if you want to study these, you'll be able to read and talks and so forth. And I'll get more in the next, particularly the next 2 weeks, more detailed with these sort of conceptually. But as is my predilection, what I'd like us to play around with a bit first tonight is trying to get a sense of the flavor of these. And then for a tiny bit of homework, what I'd like you to do is see not what you can learn or read or study or understand about these this week, you know, not that sort of thing, but if you can get a sense of how they feel in your experience of daily life, experience of meditation. You can access these in both contexts, so that you have a beginning of a flavor of recognizing them. And then you might also get a sense of what could happen if you engaged in cultivating them more. So, but just to play with this, we want to get a taste of this. It's said sometimes that we're sort of born with the five basic sense faculties: seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, right? And then, of course, there's the sixth, which is all the mental formations. But and so because of that, we are extremely identified with our experiences of seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling. And as we certainly grow in skill with that from when we're tiny. And those of you who have little babies or grandbabies now, know how a lot of early learning has to do with kind of the baby making sense of this, these five, you know, and kind of distinguishing seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling. So in a way, there are primary faculties, and a primary way as we begin to reach into the world and to have experience in the world. But what if at some point we engage in the spiritual path and so forth? What if we start to give a little bit more and then a little bit more and then a little bit more attention to faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom? What if over time we begin to perceive ourselves as spiritual beings, not just sensate beings, but spiritual beings? And what if we start to reach into the world of experience, reach into ourselves with the capabilities of these other faculties? Faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. So that we could begin to cultivate the skills, like we cultivate the skills of the other sensations. You know, a musician has many more skills in hearing than I do. An artist has many more skills in seeing than I do. Sculptors touch the sense of touch, and so on. So we see in our world and in our lives that there are the use of these five senses, and then there is cultivation of them, and then different areas of specialization for different people. People who lose one of the senses, it's said, often develop one of the others to a really much more heightened skill level and awareness. So we can relate to this. This happens. This is something that happens in our lives. So what about thinking of this list instead of just as something conceptual that we learn about, you know, in our study of the spiritual path, in the path of Buddhism? So there's this list, okay, and then there's faith and energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, and we would define those and be able to think about them and maybe talk about them in a conceptual way. What I'd like to suggest is that since they are faculties, powers, strengths, we could also feel them as a faculty. Notice them, their presence in our experience, just like we do with seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling. We can also bring our awareness to bear on how they function, both we could see in maybe more ordinary life experience, and then also we could distinguish them as relating to our spiritual path. We could also watch our experience in ordinary life and in our meditation practices and so forth, and see how they operate when they're present, when they're absent. We can even reflect on our spiritual journey and notice when one was more or less present, when we developed one or the other more, when one or another of them became stronger, and so forth. So I'm suggesting that we get out of our conceptual knowing about this list and into experiencing them and tasting them. Now I'm crossing the categories here. Really taking it seriously that these five are ways we're going to navigate. Just like if we were going down a certain road or a certain highway, and I said, okay, we're going to go from here to there, but you can't have a car, you've got to be blindfolded, your ears are going to be plugged, and you can't have any help. And you say, wait a minute, how will I get from down this road if I can't use these various sensations? So we know that we navigate through the world using these sensations, our five senses, a lot. So now I'm suggesting that our spiritual path uses and develops these five faculties, and that we can intentionally use and develop them even more once we get a sense of how they feel, how they work. So, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. So if you might assign a finger to each one so that you could get the list going in your head. I want to say a few things about each of them so you begin to, you know, get a sense of what you're looking for. Faith, for instance, some of us may have a strong sense of that. Some of us may have a strong aversion to that based on, as a concept, based on experience of maybe having faith, certain kinds of faiths or religious faith imposed upon us. Others may feel that we are very much somebody, we might even call ourselves a faith type. Others might say, well, that's the one I'm working the end. You know, that'll be the last one. But if we shift a little bit and maybe use words like conviction or commitment, that could make it easier. Some of you, faith is okay. That word will be fine. But others, not such a good word. So maybe if you experiment with conviction or commitment and play with that a little bit. For example, I don't think people would show up here on Tuesday nights if there wasn't this element. In some of the traditional writing, in the Buddhist writing on faith, they'll say faith in the Buddha. But that's not the whole story. It could easily be faith in the Dharma. Faith in the truth, faith in one's ability to proceed on the path, experience the truth, or get a little further down the road, closer to experiencing the truth. A conviction that this particular thing that you do quite often on Tuesday nights is worth your whole Tuesday night. However far you have to travel to get here, that kind of commitment to this particular path that you're chosen. Now it can be, you know, the outer commitment, but then also noticing your inner commitment. So that looking back, some of us have many decades we can look back over. Some of you have fewer decades you can look back over. But seeing choices you've made, the continuing path of spiritual practice, wherever that originated and where it took you and so forth. So what kept you returning to that? What inside you kept you returning and keeps you going and keeps you showing up here? Keeps you, you know, you're among Sangha here, but I know all of you have had experiences in sort of the regular world, even world of other spiritual practitioners, where when you describe what you do, people say, what? I remember talking to a hairdresser just before I was about to go on a 3-month retreat and telling her to cut it really, really short because I wasn't going to be able to get a haircut for 3.5 months or so. And so, oh, what are you doing? And I described, you know, particularly a Vipassana retreat. And it was just, she said, so you don't talk the whole time? I couldn't even, you know, not talk for a day. And then asking more questions, and I remember, she said, so the dining room, you know, you're in, I was going to IMS, so it's a big place, you know, 100 people, 50 in the dining room can sit at a time, and so you're not even talking when you're eating? And so she said, so it's so silent when you're eating. And I said, well, nobody's talking, but I didn't ever find it particularly silent. Because, of course, you can hear everybody thinking about everybody. <You know? laughs> And it gets louder and louder as you know. So that's a very strange thing to do, right? And some of us go back year after year. So this kind of conviction, a kind of a commitment of faith that this is a good thing to do, and we will go out of our way to continue to do this practice and to follow this path. So what is that? How does that feel? And particularly, I have to confess, this retreat I was on was hard. I'm not actually used to that. I always say to people, I have two best things, meditation and sleeping. Those are my best things. Everything else in life, I don't know. You know, relationships, I don't know. meditating and sleeping. But this one was kind of hard. I was doing Tibetan practices, which are kind of wild and crazy. You know, maybe I think it'd been easier if I'd been doing more of the Theravada style that I was used to. But in any case, right after, you know, it's sort of this feeling of, if I had a grade, I'd give myself a C+, you know. But then right after, it's like, that's silly. I did a lot, you know. I may have not done in my mind what, you know, I had thought I would. But do we ever? You know, that's the mind, right? And really, it was fine. It was great. It wasn't perfect, but it moved me along. They said the phrase onward leading. The practice is onward leading. And would I do it again in a minute? So that sense of what is it that would keep one coming back? Because, you know, if we'd gone somewhere and on a vacation and it wasn't particularly what we'd imagined and we probably wouldn't go back there. You know, we'd go somewhere else on our vacation next time. But that sense right away of, yeah, I'll go back. Of course I'll go back. You know, I'll keep returning. We'll keep returning to our Zabutans and our meditation place in our house and so forth. No matter how long it's been since we weren't there previously, whether it's been a day, a week, a year, we keep returning. Yes, we'll go back because of this taste, this flavor, this sense of commitment, conviction, quality of faith. We can also, it's okay to look at these in other areas of life as well, just to get that sense, that flavor, what we trust. Again, remembering our childhood, or those of you who have children, grandchildren, something about faith that's related to trust that you see in children in relation to their parents, their grandparents. Even just the one always we think of when encouraging meditation students, thinking of children, little babies, toddlers learning to walk, pre-toddlers. That faith, it's just fall down, get up. Fall down, get up. Fall down, get up. Nothing, there's no registering of, I fell down again. I'm just not good at this. That's not the way that their thing is the getting up part. They're just going to do it. They see all these other people walking around and they're going to do it. So that kind of, it's in a tiny person that age, it's completely nonverbal, non-conceptual. But it's a fierce energy, you know. A fierce, those of you who have had, I had a friend with one of those toddlers that you really have to watch out, or they're going to be down the middle of the street just running with glee, you know. You have to keep an eye on, keep the doors locked at all times. There's just so much. And that shifts us into this sense of energy and our list. Faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. So the energy that we use on the path. Or another word might be vigor. That's an old-timey word, but it's used a lot, vigor. Persistence is the one I like. Sometimes when we say just energy as a spiritual faculty, then people say, well, I don't have any of that. But persistence, the energy that will once again, you just keep showing up. You just keep showing up for your practice, showing up for the sitting groups. If you have an opportunity to retreat, then it's like you get up every morning and do it. You just keep showing up. I remember again, you know, in when a three-month retreat, it's quite the undertaking. And the first time that you go. And I remember realizing in the walking meditation, I mean, just imagine those of you who haven't gone on these long retreats, if suddenly you were here in this building, St. Mark's, say they have a dormitory over there, and then you're meditating over there in the nave or whatever, and then you come here to do your walking meditation. And you're walking back and forth, and of course the thought occurs to you once or twice. 3 months? This room? And then you start to calculate how many hours a day, every day, I'm going to have to walk back and forth in this room every day, every other hour, for 3 months? It's like, what? What have I done? You know, how do I get out of this? So there is this having to harness this energy of persistence. And it is an energy. And I, at one point, got such a feeling. It was this wonderful aha, walking back and forth. And I realized when I got to the end of the walking hall, and turned around, in that turning around, I had to pretend that I had to do a little trick and pretend that I'd never walked across that floor before. And so that I did that for a long time. Every time I got to the end and turned around, I just pretended. So it was a kind of an energy persistent that to mobilize, and I knew it was a trick. I mean, I could watch it all happening. But what it did was allow me to access that fresh energy that, you know, you've never walked across the floor. And of course, it's not about the floor in the room, it's about the mindfulness of the body sensations, which brings us, of course, to our third in our list, mindfulness. Mindfulness is the heart of everything, isn't it? It's on all the lists, pretty much, and it's the heart. It's the heart of this list. So we always can, we know the flavor of that. We know we're training in it. We're learning about it. If you want the best description, particularly in the Theravada literature, that I think the best description of what mindfulness is, it's Bhante-ji's book, Bhante Gunaratana's book. Is it chapter 13? I think it's chapter 13, titled Mindfulness. And he describes, he starts out, of course, saying that it's not a describable thing. It's indescribable. But then he proceeds to try to describe it, and it's really, really, really brilliant. If you ever want some energy, some encouragement for the cultivation of mindfulness, then look at that chapter. I think you can find it on the web if you don't have the book. Usually, it's hard to find, I mean, it's hard to give you an address for Bhante Gunaratana's book. It's called Mindfulness in Plain English. And it's usually somewhere for free on the web, but it seems to change addresses. I don't know what that's about, something kind of magical or mysterious. But you can track it down or go to any bookstore and just stand there and read it. You know, you don't have to buy the book, just stand there and read chapter 13. But it will encourage you. It will cheer you on when you, he describes this awesome, it's really this awesome faculty that we as human beings have the potential to cultivate. If you don't cultivate it, you don't see it all that much. Or you might be familiar with it if you're an artist or a musician, or in certain disciplines you've had to cultivate a particular kind of mindfulness attention. But this is a very special kind of mindfulness when we're talking about our spiritual path. But it is an awesome power of mind. It's an awesome faculty. When you get into very, very deep states of concentration, when you've been crossing that same floor for 3 months, and working the mind to really amazing levels of concentration where you start to see very, very subtle mind moments, you can begin to watch. There's really interesting thing that can happen when there's strong concentration. And so mind moment, the concentration is there. And then there's mindfulness, and then sometimes for a moment there's no mindfulness. In just a moment, your whole experience blanks out. It's just like, it's like watching a movie, if somebody just turned it on and off, or the TV or some video or something, just blank. Or if somebody, because it's dark out now, if somebody just turns these lights off and then turns them on again, and you know, our eyes, it's like gone and then it's present, the room. The factor of mindfulness is so powerful that your entire experience, if there isn't a moment with it present, will disappear for a moment. It's very weird. And then some people think, was that enlightenment? You know? But actually it wasn't. It was a moment when mindfulness was absent. But just a moment. It's a, you know, it's this, you're in these intensive states and weird things are going on, and you know you're very, very concentrated and you're tracking every second, and then bam, you're gone. Everything is gone. Everything is gone for just that, and then it's back again. That's how powerful mindfulness is as a faculty of mind. So it shows up in all the lists, and as this power, this strength, this precious jewel, it's the heart of this list. These lists, these faculties pair up, but mindfulness doesn't pair with anything because it's supposed to just be there. So it's worth our time. It's worth our time cultivating it. It's the heart of the path to cultivate it. And what's wonderful is you don't have to, you know, you don't have to have extraordinary amounts of it. You have to have a kind of a middle amount, which is nice. It's the middle path. So some people do have more amounts of it than others, and more is always good, but it's not required for proceeding on the path. But you got to get some of it. You got to learn what it is and cultivate it, which is why we show up for our meditation and we do our practice. Mindfulness tells you when you're distracted and when you're not, you know? And then concentration, which is also sometimes we could say focus or one-pointed attention. That would be another way to concentration. One-pointed attention, gathering the force of attention, which is scattered. It's scattered in the five senses. It's generally scattered around the whole city. It's generally scattered through our lives. A downside of having many more decades is you've got, you know, the attention can be scattered through many decades of memory. But concentration is a factor of mind, a faculty that will focus it, which we want also to cultivate. Once again, we don't need extraordinary amounts to walk the path. Some people do have extraordinary amounts, but again, just a middle amount can help us proceed on the path. Quite another comforting thing, wonderful thing. And then finally, wisdom, sometimes called discernment, an intuitive kind. So we don't call it knowledge unless we would say intuitive knowledge, because it's much deeper than the conceptual knowing. So wisdom and then discernment, because the wisdom needs to have particular direction. So while we can be knowing and knowledgeable about a lot of things, for the path of practice, the wisdom, the discernment that can see into the truth of reality, can see impermanence, can see things about suffering, the truth of suffering, where it's present, how it could be released and let go of. Wisdom into the lack of self-nature. Wisdom into emptiness. Those are the particular areas. Faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. The best paragraph about these, maybe not the best, one of the best, among the best. This is Joseph Goldstein wrote this paragraph in the book Seeking the Heart of Wisdom. The five spiritual faculties, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, are our greatest friends and allies on this journey of understanding. These qualities are most powerful when they are in balance. Faith needs to be balanced with wisdom, so that faith is not blind and wisdom is not shallow or hypocritical. When wisdom outstrips faith, we can develop a pattern where we know something and even know it deeply from our experience and yet do not live it. Interesting, huh? That's what the mind will do, you know? We can know with things really, really deeply. We can expound on them. But we might not actually live it. So faith brings the quality of commitment to our understanding. So that's what faith is about. There's something, you know, the Pali word faith is like, is very similar to the, or is it Sanskrit anyway, bhakti, devotion. Faith, there's devotion there. Again, it doesn't have to necessarily be in a concept or even in a being, although it's spoken of in the tradition as faith in the Buddha, but faith in the path, devotion to the path, devotion to the path of truth, commitment. And you can even, once you're walking down that one, it gets to feel like love. And wisdom also gets to feel like love. So you have to experiment with the words that fit with your own experience. Some people that wouldn't feel right. And other people will say, well, where's love on that list? Well, it's hidden under each of these. It's an energy too, right? So the energy of love. If you love the something, you're interested in it, and there's energy there. All right, so faith brings the quality of commitment to our understanding. Energy needs to be balanced with concentration. Effort will bring lucidity, clarity, and energy to the mind, which concentration balances with calmness and depth. So interesting, when you think of concentration, you don't it doesn't sound like calm. But in its strongest points, concentration becomes incredible calm. Just incredible stillness. If you know and heard of the jhana practices, those are concentration practices. They bring joy, happiness, calm, and stillness. So it's odd, you know, in our Western way, the word concentration, we wouldn't necessarily associate it with calm. But maybe people who are musicians have had that kind of experience where you're playing a very complicated piece, it's taken you possibly years to learn it, and you're doing it really, really well, and you just go into the zone of calm. And if it's Bach, it's joy and calm. And so these are interesting faculties. So if we explore them a little bit, they're not just the word on the paper. They've got so much more juice and dimension than that. So energy needs to be balanced with concentration. Effort will bring lucidity, clarity, and energy to the mind, which concentration balances with calm and depth. An unbalanced effort makes us restless and scattered. And too much concentration that is not energized comes close to torpor and sleep. And that's why you find yourself, you know, you may remember, or some of you may still be, you know, say you're studying for finals or something, and you're just working so hard, and then you're just kind of asleep on the book. And you've been concentrating, the faculty of concentrating is really, really there, but the energy is gone, and suddenly it's just, and it feels so weird, you know, you're motivating, you want to study, and you're focused and concentrated, and yet, oddly, that brings sleep. Or, of course, those in our meditation experience, it's just so weird, you know? And then we start to think, well, maybe I need to sleep more at night, drink more coffee, eat less food, walk, you know, go running at lunch. You know, we go through all these strategies on retreats because the torpor is there, and yet we feel like, well, we're doing well with concentration. But it's this balancing act, the energy. Sometimes interest helps. Sometimes you can think of energy as also interest, and that will balance out the concentration. Sometimes, occasionally you even have to back off with the concentration just a little bit to get enough energy. So it takes a while, you know, it's a balancing act. Mindfulness is the factor that balances all these and is therefore always beneficial. So I'll read the paragraph again without my blah, blah, blahs. The five spiritual faculties, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, are our greatest friends and allies on this journey of understanding. These qualities are most powerful when they are in balance. Faith needs to be balanced with wisdom, so that faith is not blind and wisdom is not shallow or hypocritical. When wisdom outstrips faith, we can develop a pattern where we know something and even know it deeply from our experience, yet do not live it. Faith brings the quality of commitment to our understanding. Energy needs to be balanced with concentration. Effort will bring lucidity, clarity, and energy to the mind, which concentration balances with calmness and depth. An unbalanced effort makes us restless and scattered, and too much concentration that is not energized comes close to torpor and sleep. Mindfulness is the factor that balances all these and is therefore always beneficial. It's kind of understatement, that last line. I love the way he said that. That's the point. So, faith and wisdom, energy and concentration, mindfulness. Faith and wisdom, energy and concentration, mindfulness. So, actually we're getting close to the end of tonight. I wanted to leave a little time for questions, and if you also have questions about the meditation, either of the techniques, that's fine. But I'm going to do a little stretch here. If any of you know this, sing along with me. Singing. I talk about musicians like I have no musical quality. But part of faith, when it really, we've been on the path a long time, and really that sense of the Buddha nature inside of us, what the Buddha represents, really the truth. There are verses in praise of the Buddha that come with faith. So this is the Pali chant. In English, it's something like, he is the Lord, the Arhant, the fully and perfectly enlightened one, endowed with knowledge and perfect conduct, the happy one. This is our Buddha nature, the happy one. Knower of the world, supreme charioteer, teacher of gods and humans, the Buddha, the Lord. Itipiso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho vijjhacharana sampanno sukhato lokavidu anuttaro purisa dhamma Sarati Sata Deva Manutsanam Buddha Bhagavati.